Good morning and good morning. Thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an incredible show for you today. Today's show is going to be so interesting and so unique that you definitely want to go ahead and grab your pen, grab your paper, or if you know, for the young whippersnappers, grab your phone, grab your recorder, and take notes, because what we learned today, you definitely don't want to miss. But as always, I'm going to ask you to do what I ask you to do Monday through Friday, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone that you know. Maybe they're in your house. Maybe they're across the street. Maybe they're at work, but there's someone who needs this information. It might change their business. It might change their life, but they won't have this information unless you go ahead and share the show with them, because as I always say, friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're going ahead and sharing the show with your friends, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our very first guest, Ms. Christy Murdoch-Edgar. Christy is a content writer, consultant, and coach who helps real estate and business professionals stand out as industry leaders through effective content marketing strategies. As a contributor and educator for leading real estate companies such as Inman, Reminder Media, and Realtor.com, Christy is a trusted leader in real estate marketing. Good morning, Christy. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you? Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. I am excited to learn more about you. So tell the people who you are, what you do, and what you're passionate about.
Thank you. I was a school teacher for 20 years, teaching English and coaching writers, sometimes really good writers, sometimes really reluctant writers. And during that time, I got my real estate license and started connecting with people who, you know, I think people don't realize real estate involves a lot of writing. Property descriptions, marketing materials, all of that. And so I started connecting with people who needed that skill. And so I left real estate and went into real estate writing. So my website is Writing Real Estate. And then I also have a course called Crafting the Property Description. It's an online course that you can find out more about at my website. I also offer property descriptions, blogging, all of those types of services. So it's really designed not only to free up time for real estate agents and brokers, but to teach people, you know, because that's sort of what I see is that some people want to just kind of outsource all of their writing, but a lot of people love writing, you know, and they just maybe don't feel really confident in their writing or in their content creation. So I do a little of both. I do a little coaching as well as the writing piece of it.
Mm-hmm. So are you passionate about the writing piece of it or more passionate about the real estate piece of it?
Actually more passionate about helping people grow their businesses. You know, I felt like I had a huge advantage as an entrepreneur that I could create my own content. I could create my own website. I could, you know, write a blog. I could get media appearances because I could, you know, be a contributor for places and get bylines and link backs and things like that. So my SEO grew because I was getting, you know, really high level media connections. And so that was a lot of privilege. Those were really big advantages to have. And so I want to be able to share that with people. I find that a lot of the people who want coaching and want to learn are female entrepreneurs. My male entrepreneurs want to outsource things. And my female entrepreneurs, a lot of them want to learn. And mm-hmm. So I want to be able to kind of provide both sides of that. So I love helping women, especially grow their businesses. I think it's, you know, I always say there's like an old boys club where everybody supports each other and promotes each other. And we need an old girls club. And I'm an old girl. So I'm really here to help people figure out what they need and then figure out how to do whatever it is that they need.
I like that, Christy. I like that idea in general, but I think we might have to rename the old girls club, because you know what I mean? Just the idea of being old. Like, I'm into the hot summer, you know what I mean?
So right. I was an old girl when I was 20. So, I mean, you know, I'm used to it. It's what I am.
That sounds like the old gray mare. She ain't what she used to be. You know what I mean? I'm going to come back to you, Christy. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, the incredible Miss Lacey Hennessy. Lacey is a self-taught artist, muralist, and entrepreneur based out of Greenville, South Carolina. Her body of work is often a reflection of her personality, colorful and fun, displaying bow lines and patterns, all with purpose. She is a chameleon of the arts, meaning her style and techniques are adaptable, which is a welcome advantage for clients who have their own goals and visions for space. Good morning, Lacey. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. What did you think about what Christy had to say?
Well, the education piece definitely hit for me. As I've started to grow my business, I've often learned the same, that a lot of people have just reached out to me on Instagram and different channels, kind of asking me how I got started. My business basically grew from a side hustle. So I've only been a full-time entrepreneur for about 3 years, and it kind of grew from a hobby. I always painted on the side, and there's that old adage of, starving artists. So back when I was in college, it was, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? And art was an idea for me, but there was such a negative connotation or reputation that artists don't make any money. So I have worked really hard to change that by being transparent with my followers and my clients. I want to have just really upfront conversations, and I've really tried to grow the industry, if you will, as just being open and transparent, talking about money. I feel like women don't necessarily feel comfortable about that, or it seems like it's inappropriate. When for me, I'd rather get to a no faster than, you know, follow up with emails numerous times trying to, you know, follow and chase business. So the way my business has kind of grown is just being really open with people. And Lacey Does is kind of my company name, and it's kind of grown from people saying, well, see if Lacey does it, because I'm a yes person, and very rarely do I not take on a new challenge. So it's Lacey Does Murals, Lacey Does Digital Design, Lacey Does, you know, hopefully everything, because I am not shy to say that I love to make a buck, and I'm an entrepreneur first, an artist second, and I know that sometimes that can seem backwards, but I believe that if anybody has a skill, particularly women, we're all good at something. We all have friends that reach out to us to basically ask for a favor. And for me, if you're being contacted, even if it's proofreading, if you've got friends asking you to do that, there's a business behind that. So yeah. I have really just tried to use my growing platform on Instagram as a way to let people know that if you have a passion, if you have a dream, like, you don't want to be sitting at a desk, and maybe you do, maybe that's your thing. You want to leave at 5 every day. Good for you. But whatever you want to do, there's a way to do it. And for me, it's murals. So I've been, a passion of mine is traveling. Freedom has always been my why. Freedom to travel, financial freedom. So I have kind of just every day, every month, every year, I make goals around that, how I can do that. So I'm kind of adding business with pleasure and have become a traveling muralist. I'll go anywhere to do them. So my first year, I set out a goal. I was like, oh, I'll do 5 this year. And I just finished 13 in this month. So it's
congratulations.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's been really fun. So yay, Instagram and the internet. You can sell anything on the internet.
Okay, so do you have a seminar or something coming up? Because I'm signing up. Whatever you about to...
Let me tell you, a new goal of mine. You know, COVID was tough, but I am naturally, in any social setting, a talker. But when people come to me and start asking, like, oh, how can I do it? I'm like, do you have 10 hours? Because I'll never shut up. I'm very passionate.
We don't have 10 hours this morning, but I can definitely tell you're passionate, and I definitely agree with you. That's Thank how the Ash Sharifa brand was born, from a million people going, I don't know, Ash Sharifa. I don't know, Ash Sharifa. And even now, I get the majority of my clients from people who say, what they call and they say, well, I don't know exactly what you do, but Susan said, Ash Sharifa. And I'm like, well, talk to me. What's going on? And by the time we finish this call, I figured it out. We figured it out together. So Lacey, I am going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce my next guest, and she's amazing as well, Miss Martha Sullivan. Baby boomers were known for flipping houses. Millennial entrepreneurs will, in turn, be the generation to grow and flip businesses. And they are in the position to help each other. Boomers are now thinking about their big flip, exiting ownership of their companies. Will they get what they need out of the business to fund their nest egg? How do they know? And if the value isn't high enough, what can they do? This offers millennials an opportunity to move into the ownership position, either through a family business or other means. Good morning, Martha. How are you?
Good morning. I am doing well, and I am just so excited. I'm so pumped up to be surrounded by these wonderful women. And you know, Christy, I think I came up with a name for our group, and that, instead of it being an old girls club, it's the Badass Club.
I like
We're
that.
Going gotta, for it. We're going
the badass
for it.
Women. We're gonna put the women in there somewhere.
You got it. You got
I like
it.
That, Martha. Tell us about yourself. You got great ideas. Are you, you know, marketing somewhere in there?
Yeah, well, I think that came from my dad's side, because he was a sales and marketing guy. But I am actually, I like to kind of frame myself, because my best act of rebellion really framed what ultimately was my career. I started out in information systems, and ultimately went to work for a CPA firm. I was doing consulting. And I got so tired of being told, you can't do that. You're not an accountant. It's like, okay, I can take care of that. So as an act of rebellion, I went and did what I needed to do to get the certification. And then I went back to doing what I was doing before. But that's really kind of formed who I am throughout my career. And Lacey, I really liked your term about chameleon, because that's kind of what I feel like I've been throughout my career, going from information systems to CPA to working with businesses and helping them grow and build. And then ultimately, when it's time to transition the ownership to somebody else, making sure that that business is something that can transfer. What I get really passionate about, there's a statistic through the Exit Planning Institute that there about only 70% of businesses actually sell. So all of our businesses are not necessarily transferable, because we haven't made sure that it would be attractive to somebody else. It's attractive to us, but it may not be attractive to somebody else to actually want to pay you for it. The other statistics that they talk about is 3 out of 4 business owners. There was a survey that said 3 out of 4 business owners profoundly regretted selling their business 12 months after. Hmm. Profoundly regret. That gets me out of bed in the morning, because that's just flat out wrong. That shouldn't happen. That shouldn't happen. And part of it is because they don't understand how value is created and actually cashed out, how that whole thing works. But also it's because they didn't think about what was coming next. Mm-hmm. After they got done with the adventure of running that business, what's their next adventure? And so I get really pumped up about that in terms of helping build businesses and grow them profitably, as well as ones that can transfer. Mm-hmm. To somebody else. Somebody else will want to take it over when I'm done playing in my sandbox. I can give the sandbox to somebody else.
You're fun, Martha. I like talking to you.
No,
seriously. But I agree. One of the things that I speak about is my question I love to start out with is asking the question, are you operating a business or are you operating a hustle? Now, there's no judgment in that. You can do whatever you want to do, but they are two completely different things. And when I saw that the most was during this COVID pandemic, and business owners went to get the EIDL or the PPP, and they don't even have an EIN. I'm like, you've been in business for 30 years. How do you not have?
How do you do this?
Right. Yeah. Have you seen that as well?
I have. I think the pandemic was a 2x4 across the head for a lot of business owners, as well as everybody else. I mean, I think we all sat back and went, holy cats, this is this is mind altering because it makes you think about what's important in your life. But it also, with the PPP and all of the support programs, if you weren't paying attention to building a strong business, you got the rug pulled out from under you, and it sucked. I think there are a lot of baby, and I know there were a lot of baby boomers that in 2019 were sitting pretty fat and sassy. They're like, yeah, I'm having fun and making money. This is great. This will go on forever. And they were kicking the can down the road in terms of, yeah, you know, I might be 60, but you know, 65, I'll sell it in a couple years. Well, the pandemic took the wind out of that sail. And now they're having to figure out, how do I get it back to that level so I can get what I need out of it? Or they're just throwing in the towel and saying, screw it, I'm turning out the lights, closing the door, and calling it a day, which is really tragic. It's really, really tragic.
I definitely agree. Now, Martha, I am going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, the amazing Miss Allison Roberts. Allison knows what it takes to make it in this world. As a young woman who found herself homeless, pregnant, and forced to live in her car, she turned to the writing of Napoleon Hill for comfort and guidance. Little did she know then what a huge impact his philosophies would make on her life. As a cognitive behavioral expert, along with her natural intuition, Allison has guided thousands of people all over the world to find their internal power. Good morning, Allison. How are you?
Good morning. I am so happy to be here with you and all of these amazing, incredible people.
Wow. I'm excited to meet you. I was reading your bio and I'm listening to this story, and then I see you and I'm like, oh, she couldn't have experienced that. That people believe that, you know, it's like, I'm just happy I'm here. And like, but you went through a lot to get here.
I did go through a lot. And that's why I am so passionate about being a cognitive behavioral expert, because, you know, most of us believe that we are our circumstances and we just stop. You know, it's like I'm homeless and then the big stop sign goes up and they live that life or whatever it might be. So I am super passionate about what I do, because I literally watch people's lives change when they start to understand that once we become the boss of our brain, the world is our oyster. We can do anything that we want. And it's so much more than mindset, because mindset work, they tell you to change your mind, but they don't, a lot of mindset coaches don't know how to teach people. And so being a scientist and understanding neurotransmitters and neuropathways and how our brain actually functions with everything, it's so fun to teach people how to learn how to think a new way. So that's what I do.
Interesting. But I want to go back to that moment. This, you know, because I love learning about businesses. I love learning about what people do, but there's usually a defining moment. And you talked a little bit about that in your bio. You started reading this book. So when you went and you were reading Napoleon Hill, was this Think and Grow Rich?
Think and Grow Rich, yep.
Right. What did you do at that moment? You know, did you have this eureka moment where you were like, you know what? I have to do this different. I have to save money different. What changed for you in that moment reading that book?
Well, I was reading that book in the front seat of my Volkswagen Beetle, 4.5 months pregnant, in the dead of winter. And people don't think that Atlanta gets cold, but it does. It gets really cold. And before I had read that book, I just kept thinking, like, I'm not going to get out of this. This is my life now. I'm not going to get out of this. This is, you know, I can't believe that I ended up here and I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how to get out of this. I just kept thinking that same thing over and over. Well, Napoleon Hill teaches that, you know, we become our thoughts. And it was week number 3 in my car. And I just had this moment where I was like, you know what? I don't have anything to lose by thinking something different. I mean, at this point, I'm at life's like rock bottom. I don't have I'm not going to lose anything at all by thinking that there's a way out of this car. There's a way that I can be warm. There are people who are going to love me. I can make an amazing plan for this baby that's in my belly. Our future can be completely different. And within 72 hours, the same professor who had given me the book realized that I was living in my car and knocked on my window and got me out of there.
Ooh, the rest is history. Allison, I am going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Susan Lindner, cultural anthropologist, brand marketer, disruptor. Susan got her start as an AIDS educator in the brothels of Thailand, helping turn prostitutes into entrepreneurs. Today, she's the founder of Emerging Media, a branding, PR, and marketing agency dedicated to helping tech founders reach their finish lines. Good morning, Susan. How are you?
I'm amazing. I'm here with these incredible women. What else could I be?
Everyone's amazing today. It's a great show. Susan, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, well, you know, Sharifa, I'm sure you've had a lot of women on your show who've spent a good part of their lives working in brothels. Why not? Right? This is a pretty common
occurrence. You are the first, Susan. You are the first, but I'm intrigued because now I can say, I met a lady yesterday who used to work in the brothels in Thailand. And that would be so much interesting.
You know, those student loans don't pay themselves, Sharifa. I worked as an AIDS educator, helping sex workers and their customers prevent HIV transmission. And that was my life in my 20s, working in healthcare and HIV prevention. And my last job was at the Centers for Disease Control, looking at all the strains of the HIV virus that were coming into the United States. So it's a very... it's a very kind of flashbacky moment, deja vu moment for me as we're in the middle of COVID. Mm-hmm. But I went, I became a marketer out of my exit from healthcare into technology. And I really wanted to get into tech. And I thought, well, I have an AOL account. How hard can this be? Right. So that was 1998. And the dot-com boom was taking off, and the opportunity to promote tech entrepreneurs was a joy of mine. And so helping innovators express their innovation to the rest of the world and to be able to be a tech translator was very similar to the work that I felt like I was doing in healthcare, taking really complex medical discussions, right? And we've all seen what it's like to try to communicate about public health, right? When you have a giant country with lots of ideas, lots of different lenses that they look at a problem. It's not that different when you're looking at innovation. And that's where I spend most of my time now, is being an innovation storyteller and helping innovators to tell their stories to get the resources and the runway and recognition that they deserve. So most of my time is spent working with chief innovation officers in very large companies, and getting from that idea all the way to the finish line where you and I experience that innovation in the market. And so I teach innovators the essence, this art and science of storytelling, so the rest of us can enjoy their innovations one day.
Okay, so Susan, what are the highlights? Because like I told Lacey, we don't have 10 hours,
but what
are like some of the key points to being an innovative storyteller with your business?
Yes, so the key point first and foremost is deep empathetic listening to the person that you're telling the story to. It's what we learned in the brothels of Thailand, is you have to make the listener the hero of your story. Mm-hmm. Whatever you're communicating, figuring out first and foremost what makes them the hero rather than you. And even if you've invented the coolest thing in the world, you're Elon Musk and you're Steve Jobs or another innovator, the reminder is always that the hero is Luke Skywalker, not the lightsaber. So no matter what you've invented, right, it's a reminder that there's always a human at the center of whatever it is that you're selling and whomever it is that you're selling it to find out what matters to them first, and then show them how your innovation is going to help them change their world. And so that's the process of the beginnings of innovation storytelling.
I like it. I think that's very interesting. I think we might dive a little bit deeper into it. Lacey, what are your thoughts? We've introduced everybody. We have powerful women. What are you thinking?
Well, if you keep seeing me look over, I already have like two pages of lovely notes here that I'm like, that is good. And we're only like 10 minutes in. So
did you write down any questions?
Well, I have never read the book Think and Go Rich, but now I'm going to go buy that today. And I love the comment about your hustle versus your business, because that was the real turning point for me. I was working two full-time jobs, basically, with this growing side hustle that I had in my full-time. And I'll tell you what everybody said to me before I made the leap was, anytime I'd say, oh, I think I'm about to, you know, go full-time, they're like, what are you going to do about health insurance? And I'm like, well, I'm going to pay it. Like, I'm going to figure out a way to pay it. Like, so you want me to stay in this job for another 30 years because of health insurance? Like, you got to do a little bigger. But so, and yeah, going back to the education and everything, I just feel like that's kind of what I've heard from everybody is teaching people the listening aspect, hearing what they want. And kind of that's the common thread so far for me, is teaching people what they don't know that they don't know. And maybe giving them the confidence. A confidence is another word I feel like that hasn't been said, but is that theme of making that leap and realizing your full potential, or what you need to change your mindset to, is just having the confidence that you can even do it in the first place.
Yes, absolutely. But what was interesting, when I first started consulting, I used to believe whatever people tell me. I'm about to be an entrepreneur. I'm about to start this business. And then you talk to them weeks later, and there's, you know, some of these people are still at these jobs years later. And one of the main, I was going to say reasons, but one of the main excuses that people give is, well, my job has health benefits, you know, or maybe there's someone in their family who needs those health benefits and they can't leave because their spouse needs it, or their child needs it. So I think that's definitely one of the areas that we need to improve. I see you nodding, Christy. You were talking to Lacey. Yeah. She can hear you, but I saw you. What were your thoughts, Christy?
You know, coming from an education background, that is very, very common. I used to say the people in my department, I worked right outside of DC when I was teaching, and it was one of the best schools in the country. So, you know, you really had teachers who were among, I would say, you know, some of the smartest people I've ever met, and could have changed the world. And of course, we, you know, we pay a lot of lip service to, oh, it's wonderful, you know, you're creating so much change for each individual child. But the reality is, there are other ways other than teaching that you can do that. And I saw so many people who stayed in teaching, not because they were inspired by it any longer, but really because they were afraid of what they would lose. And it was, you know, the focus on the benefits, the focus on the insurance, which was being diminished year by year. Job security was being diminished. All those things that people kind of got into teaching in part for, you know, and even now my friends who are still in teaching, you know, they talk about it. And in many places, it is just an untenable situation. And yet people stay because, well, the retirement is going to make it worthwhile. And yet, you know, you've given 30 years of your life for something that does not serve you in order to get a pension. That's not what it used to be. and I never want to be disrespectful to teachers. It's the hardest job in the world, but it is made infinitely harder when you can't see any other option for yourself, you know. So that's it's difficult. It's very,
they're valid concerns. I mean, we all have so totally. Many, there's, you know, I've taken the Enneagram test and realized as I was reading my results, oh gosh, some of these are kind of embarrassing, but you realize what your values are. And I'm one of four kids and one of my sisters, we couldn't be any more different as far as like the level of risk we're willing to take. Right. So I don't think everyone is also meant to be an entrepreneur. You know, like I said totally. Earlier, if you want to leave, if you want to come to work in the morning and leave at 5 and you can check out, that's great. I think as an entrepreneur, you'll never work harder for anybody else than yourself. Like I don't, true. I can't for anyone else, but I never turn it off. But when you're passionate about something, like you'll find the time to make it happen. And you'll find, you know, kind of like Allison said, like that switch went off in her head. And I mean, you've made so many strides. It's like, you just need to take action. And so once people have the confidence to do that in any aspect of what they want to do, even if it's adding a gym routine, you know, it's like, you just have to make that work.
Well, and I think you have to give yourself permission to make that work. I mean, I heard you talking about yourself sitting in the car, Allison, and there was a thought process going on there where you gave yourself permission to say, you know what, I don't have to stay here in this Volkswagen, or I don't have to sit in my mud puddle here. I can do it for a little while and deal with the fact that I'm in the mud puddle, but then there's just so much more to look forward to. And I see that with business owners that are scared to, you know, transition their business because they're looking in the rearview mirror. They're not thinking about just so much more opportunity and flexibility is out there if they just harness it and go for it.
There's stuff
there.
Absolutely. Allison, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible that, you know, we can, it's interesting that Lacey is like, you know, just do it. But if it were, and I respect that so much. And at the same time, though, if it worked by just doing it, we would all have an amazing life. Because, you know, I can't tell you how many gym memberships I've had. How many, you know, how many diets I've gone on and like dating sites and all of it, right? But we have to literally change our mind. It has to start there. Like a school teacher is, I mean, you know, what Christy is saying is absolutely true. They're not paid enough and they're treated horribly. But that alone is not going to get a teacher to change their life. I mean, they have to change their mind about how they're going to teach. As a matter of fact, one of my clients in Canada, she was, you know, tired of dealing with parents who didn't discipline their children, who their children could do no wrong. And it was all the teachers, you know, thoughts about what was happening in the school, but she didn't want to give up teaching and she didn't want to give up a school environment. She didn't want to give up all of that. So she just was working with me. She opened a private school. Yeah. And so now she's a multimillionaire because she has chains of these private schools. And so we had to first decide, like, she didn't want to stop teaching. She didn't want to give up school environment. She didn't want to stop working with kids. She just didn't want to do it the way she was doing it anymore. So I'm like, well, what if you could do it your way? What would that look like? And she was like, oh my God, I would have my own schools. And I'm like, well, then there you go. That's it. You know? So I just love the whole process of this, and I'm loving this conversation right now too.
Thank you. Susan, you're smiling. What are you thinking?
You know, I think Allison and I are thinking Grow Rich Sisters because that was a game-changing book for me. And I think so much of part of changing the mindset, especially for women, is this understanding this. And I've read the book now 7 times since 2017. And I belong to a mastermind group of Think and Grow Rich from the Black National Speakers Association, because I'm a professional speaker. But this group, we read it like the Bible. I mean, I have tape flags all over it and underlines and highlights, because every time you read it, it's a different book for where you are. And it constantly challenges you to change your mindset. Yeah. And so we often say in the group that I don't read the book reads me. And tells me what I need in the moment. And it has changed my thinking about wealth, about two things, actually. And Allison, maybe I'm curious about your feelings about this. There's number one, as women, we're told that, you know, it's not good to be greedy, or it's not good to have a desire, a strong burning desire for cash in hand. It feels like, right, exactly. I'm with you, Lacey. Thumbs down, hardcore. But it often conflicts with our spiritual beliefs. It conflicts with who we are in our hearts, of who we want to be generous and giving, not always looking for the next dollar on one level. And then the other thing it tells us, which was my epiphany this year in reading the book, was there's a chapter called Sex Transmutation. And it's taking the energy of your sexual desires and deploying those into your business life, into your wealth life, and becoming a magnet for the things that you want, taking all of that energy that you might deploy in an app or continue to deploy in an app and transmute some of that energy to a different place. and just listening to these beautiful women thinking, wow, we've been told for so long that sex and money are powers that should be diminished. When in actuality, when we turn those volumes up, like the doors of abundance open to us. And so those are some of the things that, you know, I was listening to this conversation is how we hold ourselves back because we don't recognize the mental traps that were set for us way before we ever got here, way before we ever got here.
Allison.
Oh man, there's so much I want to say about that, but we have a recording button going on. So I want to be really careful about where I go with this.
And it's 8:35 in California, 8:35 a.m., so you know.
This makes people tune in, let me tell you.
Yes, I do want to say that my at the core of everything that's not working in our lives is shame and guilt. And it's inherited. And our money story is our parents and their parents and their parents and their parents' money story until we create our own money story. And our sex story is inherited. It's our parents' story about sex and their story and their story and their story and so on. And so sex and money are the drivers of life. I mean, that's why we're all sitting here is because our parents had sex and here we are. So, you know, for me to hear you talk, you know, combine the two, Susan, and Napoleon Hill did too. And I mean, he was way ahead of his time, way, way ahead of his time. But he does talk about, you know, using sexual energy and creating the world in which, you know, you want to live. And it's an exciting, amazing place to go to in your life and to really start to understand that the energy that you carry inside of you with sex and money is, if you look, start looking around at your life, you will see that you are living your sex and money energy.
Wow, that was deep, Christy. You just nodded.
Let me tell you, I am a huge fan of the Kardashians, and people.
Their sex and money.
Let me tell you, and people talk about them and diminish them and diminish, and I may cry. I'm not a child, but there is something that infuriates me about the way that these powerful female entrepreneurs who have overcome the shame that society tries to put on them and have the nerve to be successful and to build businesses and to raise families. I mean, it is so offensive to me the way that they are talked about and treated as if they are nobody. And all because they just had the gall to go out and live their life anyway and not allow somebody to, you know, shame them for being good-looking women. It's just crazy. And if a male entrepreneur had accomplished 1/10 of what they have accomplished, he would be a hero. And it just blows my mind. So this whole connection of sex and money is one that sort of viscerally I think about a lot because I love pop culture and I love social media, and I'm always fascinated with the double standard, especially when it applies to women in show business and women in some of these public places, and how, you know, how dare they be successful because it only gets turned into, well, you know, she's just a whore kind of thing. It's just really upsetting.
Well, and I think hopefully in the next decade, sooner than that it will change, and it'll be interesting. With the pop culture reference, like I've heard who they're talking with on E! To replace the Kardashians is like this whole TikTok realm of kids that are coming up.
Yeah.
And, you know, even when I was in college over 10 years ago and I was trying to decide what my major was, and I said to my mom, like, oh, I have an interest in art. And, you know, she's the one who's like, oh, you can't be an artist. They don't make any money. And right. Now, you know, she's my biggest fan.
English majors get that same line.
Anthropologists.
Yeah.
When I was was in college, Facebook had just come out. So like Instagram was not in existence. And, you know, so I think over time, you know, that so many people rap on the Kardashians because they think they don't do anything when they don't take it back and look at how much that they do do. And
absolutely.
And I think that with this new wave of these kids who make millions of dollars off TikTok, and now they're going to be starting forming on television, that it's almost like, for better or worse, however, whatever side of the fence you're on, you can look at it. And now with the help of the internet, kids who are coming up can like be that kind of, which I've always thought was a corny quote of, you can be anything you want to be, yeah. But there's such a niche for so yes. many jobs these days that you can really invent your own career out of nowhere, as long as you, you know, jump into the market and do it. So I think there are groups of people, I agree with you, I'm on your side, Chrissy, that like, see the Kardashians for the business people that they are, and then yeah. people just think that they exploit it. But to me, I'm like, well, that's marketing. Like,
amen. And it's communication. Yeah. I mean, whether you're writing real estate blog posts or tweets, it is communication. It's relevant and it's meaningful and it's monetizable. And there's not a thing wrong with that. You know, I mean, when I was a high school teacher, I used to have kids write a book that we were reading as tweets, you know, because I just think communication is valid and the gatekeeping around it is so absurd to me.
Yes. Well, it's interesting that you had them write tweets and not just posts, because the initial idea behind Twitter was that if you can't say it or explain it in 140 characters or less, you don't understand it. So, you know, they have the information, but if they can tweet it out, means they have a clear understanding of what they read. Oh, interesting. Martha, you've been quiet over there. The roundtable talk show, you got to jump in.
I know. There have been a couple times, when Chrissy was talking about the double standard and how interesting it was. It was like, interesting? That's not interesting.
From a psychological standpoint, I think it's kind of interesting. I think it's
fascinating.
A snapshot of what people think and how they view women in general and women entrepreneurs in particular.
Right. Well, and I it's that type of stuff that obviously lights a fire under my chair and has kept me involved for years in many different organizations to improve the status of women and their capabilities and things of that nature. And I've been working really hard to raise a feminist son and a daughter that is self-sufficient as well. As I think about, you know, women leaders, women in business, we're also trained. And Allison, you may have, you know, whether it's the subconscious or not, we're trained to take all this on and make it look easy. And we're told to. That's the expectation. And right. I think, you know, as I'm sitting here thinking about it even more about that, you know, badass women's club, that's really where we can harness that, that power together. And I think more and more we're seeing, and maybe it was a pandemic, we're seeing more women more open to helping one another as opposed to competing with one another. And I think that's really very, very key as we think about what we want in the future and where we want to take our business lives as well as our personal lives. Because let's face it, 2020 was a polite show and it gives us a golden opportunity to create what we want coming out of it, even in the adversity that so many of us felt.
Absolutely. So I want to ask you, Martha, go back to something you said when you said I'm raising a feminist son. What does that mean? What does that look like?
Well, we've been a fairly non-traditional family in terms of there came a time when Actually, we made a choice, and my husband moved his business into the home, and he was actually the primary caregiver while I was the one going out and going to the office. And it was interesting, and I didn't really do it intentionally other than through modeling. But I remember when my son was in high school, and he was talking with these young girls, and they were just taking for granted that certain things would always be there for them. And having gone through some of the cut glass that we went through to get those rights, it dawned on me, it's like, you know what? There's nothing guaranteed. And he came home a couple times. He actually came home from college. Yeah, I got into a conversation with this girl, and she was talking about healthcare and all that sort of stuff. And she doesn't believe whatever she didn't believe. And he's like, she cannot have a feminist card and believe that. And I'm like, whoa, where'd you come from?
Got it from his mama, obviously.
He obviously got it from me and my husband, in terms of, you know, we're here as a family to contribute what we can with our gifts and our talents. And when the need is there, you go where the need is. And it doesn't matter what clothes you're wearing or how you cut your hair or whatever, it's, you do what you have to. And we kind of set some of those gender stereotypes aside. I was clearly not, much to my mother's chagrin, born to be June Cleaver. It just wasn't going to happen.
That's how you change the world. Not all of us. Yeah. Susan, have you ever felt like you were expected to be June Cleaver?
Yeah, not working in Thailand, that's for sure. I don't think that was on June's resume. But I will say this, you know, I did marry a widower with two children. And I met them when they were 4 and 6. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly when I got married, I myself imposed that mother label and the wife label on my own forehead, and suddenly started fulfilling roles that I thought I needed to fill. As a wild and single and free woman in Manhattan, I kept my tax returns in the oven in case the building broke down, because I did not know how to cook. I used to dust my stove. I didn't learn to cook on principle. That was my feminism. Let him do the cooking. I'll collect the takeout menus. And I had a pretty good collection, I will say. But suddenly when I got married, I kind of felt like the right thing to do, the correct thing to do, was to assume all of those roles while running a $1 million business. Like, oh yes, I will absolutely come home and I will cook and I will help with the homework. And yes, let's go grocery shopping at 11:30 at night because it's quiet then. That makes the most sense, sure. You know, until you find yourself going, huh, I can't move my shoulders. Not only do I need a massage, but I really feel like I'm carrying the weight of the world on my back. Mm-hmm. And they're all the self, for me, they were the self-imposed norms that I thought I had to do in order to be good.
And so what did you do? Did you just shake them off? And did you say, I'm not cooking dinner. I'm not doing anything. What did you do?
I enjoyed the macaroni and cheese and wine therapy plan. So that was kind of my, that was my healing bomb. If you eat enough macaroni and cheese and drink enough wine, you actually don't feel the weight of societal pressure on your back anymore. Not very healthy. Don't recommend it.
I can concur on that.
Shonda Rhimes has a book about, you know, the power of yes. And she's like, macaroni and cheese will actually coat all of your anxieties and smush them down till you can't feel them anymore. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying. And she's right. but it took me understanding that it's not physically possible for me to carry on these labels. And what did I really want to teach my kids anyway about? Why did I really want to be Wonder Woman? Why did I really not want to share these tasks with my spouse? And who was I trying to prove it to? And so it was a big shift to get realigned with the woman inside about what she wanted, not just what other people needed. Because as soon as you start giving it, people are like, oh yes, more please. Yes, you can please take on more. And it becomes very difficult to find the edge of where you say stop. So that was, it took quite a bit of realignment to get back to just what Susan needs. And so I think we all need to do that every once in a while.
Absolutely. My problem is I go too far. I already know what I need and I'm not, no, I, no is a complete answer and I'm okay with that, you know? And I think as you grow in life, you get more and more okay with the ability to just say no and not to take on anything that you want to. This has been an amazing show. It's just been incredible. It always just has those commonalities that just happens out of nowhere on every show. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Christy.
Thank you. It sounds like my neighbor is cutting down a palm tree, so I hope you can hear me over this. So I just am here to help men and women, but mostly women, in real estate and related industries who want to get better at communication or just get better at the things that you have to do anyway. You have to write a property description. You have to, you know, do your marketing, get your website together. And I love to do that for people, as well as to help who want to learn how to do it themselves. So go to writingrealestate.com. And you'll find everything there. And you can also find me at Writing Real Estate on Instagram. So yes. Thanks for letting me be here.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us, Christy. Lacey, what do you have for us?
Well, anywhere you are in the world, I would love to come or make a connection to do a mural in your town or your area. I do a lot with nonprofits and actually a lot of residential murals. So things that look like wallpaper, but you can see it all. I put a lot on TikTok, Instagram, and on Facebook, and everything is at Lacey, spelled L-A-C-E-Y underscore does. So see if Lacey does it is kind of my slogan. So at Lacey does, I put up a ton of fun videos so you can actually watch how I make things. So if you have the gumption to try something yourself, I also provide the tools for you to do that. So check me out, LaceyDoes.com.
So do we get to see the shirt?
So my old brand was Hennessy in the Home. My last name is Hennessy, Lacey Hennessy, but just went through a rebrand. So LaceyDoes.com. And I make a lot of smaller gifts too. I have kind of price points starting from like $50 up to my murals are by the square foot and the complexity. So there's something for everybody.
I like it. When I ran for Long Beach City Council, we painted a mural on the wall and it said Long Beach and then it said 6th District, which is the district I was running for. And so it's still there. And I kept seeing people there. And I was like, I don't know what these people are doing, what these kids are doing. Come to find out that these young whippersnappers had made it into a Pokemon, I guess, spot. So I was like, it was so weird, but they made it into a Pokemon spot. I guess they're running all over town finding the Pokemon, and this is one of the spots where they can catch it. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. It made me feel special.
Murals are obviously a trend right now, but what's so cool about them is that people really do take ownership. It offers like a sense of place, and public art in general is just free access to everyone. So if you're a business that you're and you're willing to add that to your area, not only is it aesthetically pleasing, but it can have messaging and vibes. I mean, it's really, you get a return on your investment. So it's pretty cool that people are engaging with that.
Absolutely. I thought it was real cool. Thank you, Lacey. Martha, what do you have for us?
So please visit prominencehill.com. That is my website. I have a blog that I write. I've been writing for actually a local business magazine for years and years now, and you can access that on the Providence Hill website. Also, I wanted to let people know that I work with a lot of family businesses that are actually thinking about transitioning from one generation to the next in terms of their ownership and getting the family ready to do that. And in that process, I actually have a workshop series called the Finding True Value Workshop that teaches you about how how value works in your business. So if you go to provenancehill.com/Sharifa, that there is a place where you can sign up for more information about the workshops. If you want a strategy session with me, you have the opportunity to sign up for that as well. And it has just been a joy to get to know you ladies today. So thank you so much, Sharifa, for that opportunity.
You are so welcome. Thank you for the Sharifa addition on your website.
Absolutely.
Everyone go there. Please put it in the comments section so people will have the link. Definitely appreciate that. Hope a lot of people can check it out. Susan, what do you have for us? More brothel stories?
That's going to be a one-on-one there, Sharifa.
Okay, because I have questions.
So I would encourage you to check out my website at susanlindner.com. I give lots of tips around innovation storytelling and really helping to take very complex ideas and making them accessible to the rest of us. You can also check out my podcast right here, Innovation Storytellers. It broadcasts every Tuesday on any place that you like to find podcasts. And I interview the top innovators in the world, from Tesla and Corning Glass and GE, Indeed.com, TD Ameritrade, all of whom are talking about the biggest innovations. And if you want to know what's coming in the next 3 to 5 years that is going to be rocking your world, this is the place to find it and to hear the stories of how those innovations actually reach their finish line. So I'd love to share that with your audience. Please join me. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. We'll have to check it out. So who was your favorite that you've had on the show? Because I'm just going to look for that episode.
Yeah. So my favorite was from Tesla, a guy named Michael Pilliod, and he is responsible for the glass that goes into every Tesla. And you might've seen at a recent huge press conference they had, they took a steel snowball and threw it out the window of this new truck that Tesla was coming out with, a prototype. And it was supposed to be indestructible. And it cracked and broke live in front of millions of people. Oh. And he talks about being the guy responsible for the glass that shattered all over the innovation world. And so that was a really great episode to talk about what failure feels like on a really big scale and how to come back from it.
Oh, definitely have to go tune in and listen to that one. I'll probably catch a few more, but I got to hear the end of that story. Thank you, Susan. Allison, what do you have for us?
I do a free webinar that's called Painless Pivots to Power, and you can find it on my website. It's allisonroberts.com, A-L-L-Y-S-O-N. I have to spell Allison because there's a million different ways to spell it. So the next one is coming up. It's free. So be sure and get on the list for that. I also have a live event that's happening in Atlanta in October. And it's a result of a book collaboration that I just did. And I'm in search of my next 12 women to do the book collaboration for 2022. So if you have a story to tell and you would like to be on a live stage in October of 2022, I would love to hear from you. So reach out to me on allisonroberts.com. If you want to come to the event, it is behindthepowerevent.com. You can attend either in person or virtually. It's up to you. So I'd love to see you there.
Oh, I love that. Love that. Maybe some of the ladies who are guests today, you might be interested in having them as speakers. Definitely an incredible opportunity. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who was watching it in the archives. I definitely appreciate your support. I appreciate you watching the show. I appreciate you sharing the show. But as always, please support our guests. Their website link is in the Facebook post, but don't just visit their websites. Follow them on social media. Reach out to them. Send them a message. And when you do, please let them know. Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.